5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room. It's the show other shows want to be, and the show that authors want to be on. Show is brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Well, welcome one and all. Welcome, dear listener, to it. I guess if it's the radio show, I guess it's got to be Thursday evening, and it's 9:32 Central Time, episode 48 of the new Panic Room. That's probably as exciting as things get. Nothing much has happened this week, I have to say. But my dog nearly died, actually. He got his head stuck in a Funyuns packet trying to get the crumbs off the bottom. And, bless him.
Oh, my God. See, I thought you were just...
He was lucky because I was sat working and... Sorry, hey, Xtina, you're there. I've queued you in. You are there. And I didn't do the jingle. Here we go. I was sat working and because I had the dishwasher and I just thought it was the dishwasher making it. Sometimes if you have a plate that's not quite steady and it rattles, I just ignored it. And then I heard, the dog's in the bin. Because funny, our new greyhound is... he's a bugger for getting into the bin. He'll, if there's something in there, he's the only one out of the four of them. To be fair, the chihuahua can't reach. The only one out of three of them that's figured out they can get him. There's goodies in the bin, and I just thought, the dog's in the bin. And I just had visions of trash scattered all over the kitchen. Of course, I went and there's a sort of middle dog, I guess. We call him our ADHD dog, with a Funyuns bag jammed on his head, and he was just literally running around like a mad thing. You know how the show. People having panic attacks, and they use a brown paper bag, and it crumples in and out as they. And it was doing that, and I thought, hang on. And my first thought wasn't, my dog, he's suffocating. My first thought was, I need to go grab my phone and get a picture of this, which I did. And he's blundering around, he's crashing into the furniture, and he ends up in a little corner under the kitchen unit. So I think he'd just about given up. I think he'd just gone there to die. And I managed to grab him and get this thing. And he just looked at me like, oh, thank you so much. He looks so grateful. Bless him. I did get a picture. Of course, posted it all over social media first. It was my stupid dog. But it was just the right size for him to get, you know, and it was jammed. And he somehow made an airtight seal. I don't know how he'd done that.
Oh, my gosh. Speaking of dogs, my dog, now that we're living in this wonderful trailer, you know, I don't know, because the walls are, everything is just so thin or something, but the little dog, he'll go to the door and he'll just like start, I don't know, it's like he's trying to breathe in the essence of outside or something, but he gets his little nose as close to the crack of the door as he can, and he'll start... You know, it's weird. I'm like, what are you doing?
he's probably addicted to marijuana. He's been inhaling the smoke. He'll be enjoying that. But actually, that's something. Tell you what we'll do. In honor of that, we will play this.
Oh God!
Come on, I love this. It. It's awesome. I'm gonna dance around the room to this. That was, and obviously that was recorded live from Xtina's kitchen window.
that's your
next door neighbour. That is, he's playing his banjo. He watches you dress. So
that's creepy.
that was the point. That was the point. So how are you enjoying living in Trailer Town? Is it?
I hate
it. Fun?
I hate it. I hate it so bad. But you know, it's when I'm in my room, and today it rained all day, and we had some really good storms. And there's I have a nice waterfront property in my room here, because there's this big hole or, you know, whatever, and so there's like water. It's, you know, the kids actually play out in it. I'm like, oh my God, Sean, don't
awesome.
Go out there.
It's yeah. No, that's the community pool, Xtina. Don't
yeah,
be snobby,
right,
all right? Don't get
window.
Stuck up. Don't, you know, don't diss the community pool. Okay, so, you know, it's got dog turds and mosquitoes in it, but it's a pool, you know? Kids love
yeah.
stuff like that. It's great.
Yeah, and, you know, I told you, going for the walk, the walk we take the dogs on, there's like, dodo birds, and there's roosters out there, and there's big pit bulls running around, and there's horses. I mean, it's like, it's so weird. It's so weird. And there's the grave. We passed by the grave. There's two big headstones.
That sounds brilliant. You need to write something, either a short or you could get a novel out of this, you know, something
yeah.
based. I mean, it is a great location.
Steady.
You know,
it really is.
I
yeah.
so much going on and all the background stuff.
Yeah, my kid was taking the dogs for a walk, and he said that one of the neighbors, not in the trailer park, but they were, you know, further out, the guy was on his porch and he had a gun and he was shooting the gun at the ground. And Sean's like, he was like, come on. And he was trying to get the dogs to come home really, really fast. He's like, I just wanted to get out of there. But It's like there's no rules here. Trailer park living, they go by their own rules or something. There is no.
It sounds awesome.
No,
it sounds
I hate
awesome.
It.
You really need to you need to come up with a,
On my front door, there's a novel.
There's
this little nick on my front door that I swear to you looks like somebody tried to like get in with an axe or something. That could just be my wild imagination, but it sure looks to me like someone was trying to, so it's scary.
Oh, bless.
Yeah, and it's pitch dark here at night. I mean, there's like no street lights, there's no nothing. It just can't even see your hand in front of your face.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
It sounds kind of like I say, you need, as a writer, you owe it to yourself and to literature in general to sort of transpose these experiences onto paper, that's what we do, so you need to do that.
The
trailer park terror. I mean, it writes itself, doesn't it, really? It's there, isn't it? It's there.
Oh, and our neighbor that's right behind me, he's got a chainsaw. He's always, firing up the chainsaw, and that to me, that, I'm
yeah.
just thinking
do,
of.
Does he wear other people's faces, though? That's what you need to be looking
not
out
that
for.
Not that I know of. Not yet, but
if you catch him wearing somebody else's face, it's probably time to move, really.
They're
because your
meat.
Face is too
always,
late. Hmm?
They're always cooking meat out there. Now I'm wondering, where do they get the meat? What is it
yeah,
actually?
Yeah, it's meat. You know? Yeah, meat.
Yeah. I don't know what it is.
Back in England, some of the more dodgy curry houses we used to go to would you'd get the menu and be like, you would just say meat.
Oh my god.
Meat biryani, meat masala. It was like meat. What's the meat? It's meat. All right.
Meat, yeah.
And you knew not to ask. There was one actually. It was not when I was a student in Leeds, and they were raided and prosecuted. They had dog carcasses in their freezers.
Oh my god!
It was, to be fair, it was whatever. It was good food. I mean, it was, they could do a mean do piazza, dog do piazza, I guess. But with my first wife, we had cats. Every time we let the cat out, we never knew it was going to come back, or we'd just end up in somebody's dinner.
That's so bad.
But. There's a protein's protein,
Well, I was at Chinese. We had Chinese for dinner, and my son-in-law is like, "Here, you have to try this." And I'm okay. I'll try it. And he's like, "Do you like it?" I'm like, "It's okay." It's like frog legs, and I know that's not weirder, but it is weird to me. I've never had frog legs before, and
it's
just the idea. And it was like crawfish.
They're just like tiny little chicken legs. I'll eat most things, to be honest with you, unless it's green, obviously.
I don't know.
Frog's legs, there's nothing special, it tastes usually because they cook them in garlic, they taste of garlic. Snail, I like snails where they get the snail out of the shell, obviously they grind them all up. Stuff them with garlic and stuff them back in. I went to a place, it was here actually, in Houston, and I picked up a couple of snails. I've got snails, and I think it was like one of these Chinese buffet things that does everything. And I pulled it out of the shell, and it was this full snail. I've dissected snails. I could identify all the parts of a snail even now. And it's there on my plate, and I said, I can identify it. I'm not going to eat it. I just couldn't. I could not put that in my mouth. I mean, ground up. But anyway, I like most things. But I once had on a school trip actually to France years ago, I had a raw oyster. We went to an oyster thing. And it's just like eating snot. When you've got a really bad cold and you hawk it down.
No.
Like that, and you hawk it down. And that's like eating oysters.
That's so
is.
Gross. I could never do that. And
if you chew them, a friend of mine chewed on his, they expand in your mouth.
Stop.
And he's there and he's trying to chew. Instead of swallowing it right down, he's chewing on his oyster and it's getting bigger and it's sort of oozing out the corners of his mouth. And he spat it out.
No.
But I swallowed mine down, and that is the one and only. I mean, I like, cooked. I like smoked oyster. I like cooked oyster. But, raw. Why? it's supposed to be an aphrodisiac. I mean, who's going to feel sexy after drinking snot?
Yeah, no.
Oh, let's just gobble this snot down. Oh, I'm hard now. Not really.
What was the word from last week? Wasn't it last week? The twitching cock. Was it twitching? I think it was twitching.
Oh, twitching.
Yes.
Here's a fun fact. Twitching, I don't know if it translates over the Atlantic, but twitching in England is also a name for bird watching. And twitchers are people who hide in bushes and look for birds. Yes, look it up. Twitching is bird watching. So I suppose a twitching cock actually sort of works, doesn't it? The syntax works.
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just off out twitching. So, anywho, moving right from snot and twitching,
yeah.
Do we have a show this evening? I do, but we have a bit of a special show. We have one guest, but by golly, what a guest. We have Ralph James White, a personal hero of mine. He's actually inspired at least two of my epic volumes, Colton Forche being one of them.
That was so exciting learning that. I did not know that. That was really exciting.
Did you not know that is the God's honest truth? When I decided I wanted to take a crack at Bizarro, and I was looking around, I came across, I got an anthology, and Ralph happened to be in it. And then I just got another one. I got his short stories, and then I got a couple of his novels, and he's solely responsible.
That's awesome. I love
solely responsible for inspiring Colton Forche, you know, so I've got a lot to thank him for. So I think what we'll do, we'll bring James in and we will take it from there, shall we? Should we do that?
We should,
Or do you want to do Baseball Corner first?
No, we're going to bring our guest on.
thank goodness for that. Okay.
And we're in the room with Ralph James White. Good evening, sir.
Good evening to you. Hi.
Nice to chat to you. How are you this evening?
I'm doing pretty well.
We're good. I didn't realize until I was doing a little bit of homework on you that you're in Austin.
Yes, Austin, Texas.
Which for Texas speak is literally next door. So yeah, howdy there, neighbor. I'm from England, as you can probably tell. You in England, everywhere is like no more than an hour away. And when we moved here, because my wife has relatives in Austin, so we'll pop and see them. You know, we're thinking it was like going to be 40 minutes in the car, and it's like 3.5, and that is the closest city ever, really. And I wanted to go to Dallas because big fan of the TV show. So you've got to tell. I want to see Southport, and that's like five and a half hours. I mean, really, you can't drive anywhere in England for 5.5 hours. You could, but you'll end up in the sea.
Well, so next year we're going to be having KillerCon coming back here in Austin, so you need to come up and attend.
Oh, wow. I'm going to make a note of that. Do you know when that is?
It is August 24th through the 26th.
Right, so we will be there. We will be there, like I say, because it is literally, I could walk over, it's literally next door. So, definitely. In fact, Extinction and I were just talking about doing some cons next year. So, that'll be a good one to start. Good one.
Yeah,
sorry,
Extinction. Brian King's going to be there. Edward Lee is going to be there. Lucy Taylor. And, of course, I'll be there. So
fantastic.
Definitely need to make an appearance.
Oh, we will. I mean, I would like to go and get a booth or a table and be represented properly. So it's funny, we were just talking about Kongs literally just before we came on the air. So thank you for the tip. I'm absolutely delighted that you're on the show. Everybody interviews you probably say this. I am actually a genuinely big fan. I came across Raph first of all in DOA 2, which I think was a Bloodbound Books anthology. And then I then got I think it was the Book of a Thousand Sins next, and then Horrible Gods, and then like Porno for Psychos. And I was telling Xtina on just before we came on air that my first sort of extreme horror bizarro novel, The Erotic Odyssey of Colton Forche, was actually mainly, I would say, inspired by your story about the lady with a fetish for lions.
Oh, yes. Feeding time.
Yeah, that, I don't know why, that one specifically stuck in my head. And it did inspire Colton. And in fact, what I will do, if you don't mind, I will send you a copy of Colton Forche so you can see what you created there, you know. I mean, I have to ask, the feeding time, the lion, I mean, it wasn't just a fetish for lions, it was a fetish for being eaten by lions. I mean, where did that come from?
Well, you know, I'm a fan of bizarre fetishes. I kind of collect them.
Okay.
So when I was doing the research for my novel Succulent Prey, there was a website called the Wendigo Message Board. This was years ago. It was called the Wendigo Message Board, and there were people on there, some who called themselves chefs and some who called themselves long pigs, who the long pigs wanted to be eaten by the chefs. That was their fetish.
Yeah.
And all of that went into the book, but, you know, there's numerous stories that can come out of something like that. So
yeah.
I thought someone who was had fetishized cannibalism, there's what better fetish than being eaten by the literal lion, a literal king of the jungle.
I can think of better fetishes. I mean, you know, more ones that you're going to survive, to be honest. But no, it was a great, great story. You know, you got into the lady's head. I don't know how you did that, but it was just like, and it was. I mean, she. I mean, spoiler alert. You know, she did get her wish in the end. But you know, you were happy for her because she. You know, she died happy. And it obviously. Evocative of the is it LU's the German guy, who again he went and he allowed himself to be eaten by another guy because that was his thing. And so I mean it's a bit of a sort of a one hit wonder fetish, you know. Or I've done
well,
it now, you know. Here I am bleeding to death. I'm not going to do this again, you know.
it does kind of remind me, James, of in Colton Forche the game show that reminded me of.
Oh, the game show! Yes,
yeah,
his wife was brutally raped to death on a TV game show. Yes, there was that. I thought you said the barbecue. I mean, that's my favourite scene is the barbecue.
Yes.
He receives an invitation, thinking it's a barbecue in honour of his neighbour's daughter, but it turns out it's a barbecue of his neighbour's daughter. Yeah, I mean, I'm if you'd like to read it, Raph, I would be delighted to send you a copy.
Certainly.
I'd love to.
And then that just bear in mind, it is mostly your fault. So.
Nice. Now I have to. Yeah. I'm just mesmerized by your voice, by the way. You have such a nice voice, and I could just listen to it for the whole show. I'm just going to sit back and listen.
I'll tell you, it's funny enough, actually, when I prepared the reading, we'll come to that later, the reading of Munchausen by Proxy, you know, trying to pick 5 or 6 minutes out of that. I mean, I actually certainly listened to all of it. do you do audiobooks, Raph?
I have not yet. I certainly need to,
mm-hmm.
but
You could do those yourself.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's the plan eventually. You know, I would need a studio. And in mm-hmm. Austin, you would think that there's a plenitude of studios.
Yeah.
But I don't know any. I don't know
any. Oh, seriously?
Yes.
Wow. That,
do
you not leave the house? Austin is music city of Texas. I mean, wow.
Yes.
I'm sure if you literally just walk down.
Musician.
Walk down the street, you should be able to find one easily enough. But no, you should do that. You should do that.
Yeah, I would definitely.
Sorry, go on. Xfini was talking. I'm sorry. You know, she does this. You know, she's on the third bottle of wine, and she's
not my third bottle. My third glass.
Sorry, third glass. Excuse me.
No, I was just going to say that I would definitely listen to that. I'm interrupting.
Yeah. So, Raph, your latest book, Boys Night, An Extreme Horror Tale of Rape and Revenge, out August the 4th. The tagline is awesome from a general tagline from Mr. Jack Ketchum. If Raph James White doesn't make you cringe, you must be riding in the wrong end of the hearse. I love that. And it is spot on. It is absolutely spot on. So, Boys Night, tell us a bit more about that, Raph.
So that is the story of a woman who she's a feminist blogger. And anyone who writes anything on the internet these days gets, especially if you're a woman, you get bombarded with threats. Anything political, certainly, you get bombarded with threats from murder, rape, abuse, all kinds of things. It's horrible when women go through. So I thought, wouldn't it be great to have some of those threats come true in a story?
Nice.
You know, and so, but it has a twist that you'll love. I can't really talk about it because I want you to read it. But it's it wraps up neatly, I should say.
Excellent, excellent. And you've written that's co-written with Matt Shaw, yeah?
Yes. So you know, Matt's a very prolific writer. He's written something like 200 novels in the space of time that I've written 24. So,
wow.
So it's been interesting working with him.
Yeah, I can imagine that is a lot of words. I mean, in a show, maybe he just types very very quickly. I mean, I always find the thing that really sort of limits my output is just how many words I can type in a day, because you can only
right.
no matter how much your brain is working, your fingers can only type so quick. I mean, I'm literally a two-fingered typist. I don't know about you guys, but
I still hunt and peck. So
really, did
I
you
hunt
take typing in
quickly,
school?
Though.
You know,
uh-huh.
We had to take that in school.
Oh really?
No,
I wish I had.
And they cover up the keyboard so you can't see, you know, anything on it. And, you know, it's definitely...
Oh, the whole, touch typing. We used to laugh at, you know, boys who did that. You know, you call them names and, you know, you're soft and all the rest of it. But now, I really wish I'd done that.
When they had the typing class when I was in junior high, I'll tell you what a geek I was. I used to skip school to hang out at the library and read horror and science fiction novels.
Brilliant.
I was a closet geek too, though. I used to hide my book in my purse so nobody knew that I liked to read.
Seriously?
Yes. No,
that's horrible. I used to get picked on because maybe it's a common theme, you know, because I used to like reading, always had my nose in the book. Obviously, we didn't have PlayStations and that in those days.
Right.
You know, I joke not. Yeah, I am that old. You know, and yeah, I used to get called Professor and SWAT and all the rest of it. But I think it's character building. That's what it is, character building.
I agree.
And it made us what we are today, which is, well, for better or for worse. I think a lot of the murder and mayhem and gore that we create now is I think part of us subconsciously getting back at the people who picked on us over the years.
That's quite possibly true.
So I mean, yeah. Rath, I mean, I was, you know, I mean, you are obviously well known, you know, for extreme horror. I mean, where did your inspiration come from for such dark and grim stuff?
A lot of my inspiration comes from arguments. You know, when you have a argument with someone and after they leave, like an hour later, you think of all the things you wish you had said. Well,
yeah.
Well, remind me,
I write that stuff down.
Off.
Well, I write those things down. A lot of them are hypothetical situations that analogies that would have been great to use during the argument. Of course, exaggerated greatly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then I could get a lot of inspiration from the news. One of the weird things about being a horror author, and I'm sure anyone who writes horror has the same thing, is it really messes with your empathy. Because when people are telling you a story about something horrible that happened to them, my mind immediately goes, this would make it awesome story.
Yep. I'm there.
You know, it's,
and
it's
even on the news, you know, even horrible news stories.
Whenever I tell somebody about a horrible dream I had, that's like the first thing they say to me now is write it down.
Right. Oh, I have some really horrific nightmares every now, every now and then. Obviously we all do. And yeah, that's the first. In fact, my the book Flanagan, which was out sometime earlier this year, was actually a dream. I actually dreamt most of that. Yeah. And that was a nightmare. I literally got up, wrote it all down and in, you know, note form, and there you go. But no, I'm like you, Rath. You know, you. I think we it probably makes us very, very bad people. But you just people tell you all these horrible things that happen to them or the friend, and you're secretly filing it away, and they do. They come out, and then you know, I'm writing something, and even something I heard. You know, maybe it was years ago. Oh, that, yeah, I wonder what happened to him. I wonder if he survived that, you know. Oh, well, it's a good story, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of times those stories, I just take them to extremes. Well, what if this person had made this choice instead of this choice? And then I go to, you know, I take that slippery slope as far as I can. I do the same thing with incidents from my own life. You know, near-death type stupid things that I've done in the past. But so what if I had, if hadn't got out of that situation, how bad could it be? And there you go, that becomes a story.
Yeah. I think that's what makes a writer's brain different to, I'll say normal brains, regular folk. Or muggles, I think we can call them. You know, you can take something just everyday and ordinary, and suddenly, you know, before you know it, he's twisted around to something quite gruesome and nasty. Which
because
is fun, you know.
Time, yeah, I mean, most of the time we make good decisions. If we didn't make good decisions, even our worst decisions tend to be good, because if they weren't, we'd either be dead or in jail.
Yes. Yeah.
So, and you make these decisions all day long. Someone cuts you off in traffic, and you don't follow them and beat the hell out of them. You know, someone. All of these little decisions that you make every day, and all you want a good story. Just think, what would have happened if I had made that opposite decision? You know, what would have happened if that guy who was, you know, smarting off to me at the fast food restaurant, what if I shoved his head in the fryer? You know, like you think of the and then you just write that story.
That's about it. It's one way of getting it out of your head. I mean, I obviously coming over from England, I've been here nearly 7 years now. In my previous career, I was a sales rep. I was on the road a lot. Road rage was, and me were just like best buddies, you know. And you do, because when you're on the road, you know, 4, 5, 6 hours per day, you know, sometimes you'll even, you know, somebody pisses you off on the road, you know, you'll do something or, you know, just to, I mean, more through boredom than anything else. There was one time a guy literally ran me off the road, nearly killed me. And I followed him home. And he parked in his driveway, and I sat at the end of his driveway, and he was too scared to get out of his car. That's how, you know, and I would do things like that because he just really, really pissed me off. And here, obviously, you know, fast forward to Texas, I'm likely to get shot in the face if I do that. And I have to remind myself, he could have a gun, legally have a gun in his glove compartment. He could shoot me, so... Just let it, and I've had to learn over the past 7 years. Just let that go. He's been a dick. He was in the wrong, but just go. Don't even honk your horn. Just on your way, mate. You know, just back off. I just don't want to get shot. You know.
Yeah, that's a very real possibility here.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny enough. There's a story. I actually ended up in a story, funnily enough. And I'd only been here probably 2 months or so, and I got pulled for going through a stop sign. Because in England, we have what we call mini roundabouts where, you know, you give way to people come in, da-di-da-di-da. So I just zipped through it, really not really thinking. And the cop pulled me up. I was actually taking my little girl to nursery school. And, of course, I did what you do in England. I got out of a car. And I've got this cop, she said, get back in the car! And I'm walking up to him, what's up? Get back in the fucking car! I'm, what? And he thought, oh, suit yourself, you miserable bastard. And I got back in the car. Then when he came and obviously realised I was a foreigner, and he said, you came within 20 seconds of getting shot.
Because,
you know, you could have been approaching the car to shoot me. I was going to call my gun. I was going to put you down. And I thought, okay.
Wow.
I didn't know, because in England, you go to the police car and you sit in the police car. But not here. So,
shoot first, ask questions later.
That is the cops here. They do that. They will put a bullet in you and then think about it.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
Well, you know, I had a friend who lived right outside of London in Ipswich back in the late '80s, early '90s, and he used to run raves, and he told me that he hired extra security. Because he would run illegal raids. And he hired extra security to fight the cops long enough for him to get the money out if the cops showed up.
Oh, my God.
And I thought, that would never happen in America.
Nope. No, it would not.
That was like Twilight Zone for me.
Wow. Yeah, that, yeah. They would just be that bang, 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 goodbye. Well, that's the thing with England. I mean, the cops, you know, they don't carry guns. They carry tasers and a baton. You know, and certainly in the light of what's happened over there recently, hopefully I think that debate should be opened again, because there's been instances where cops have actually been knifed to death by these bad guys. And if they'd had a gun, that would never have happened, you know. So
Yeah.
You know, but it took me a while to get used to seeing, you know, law enforcement. Even the mall cop has a gun.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, he's taken me a while to get used to seeing his guns just like that, you know. But so, yay, welcome to Texas.
Well,
I'm loving it.
Fertile ground for stories. Fertile ground for horror stories here.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm anxious to do 11 questions. Can we do 11 questions now? Although, it's minus one because I still have no idea what happened to question
number two. She's actually lost one of the questions. I don't know how she's done that.
I think you never gave me all of them. I swear. I'm going to have to look back, and I can't find it anywhere. I've looked everywhere. Question 10 is gone. So it's just going to be a theme now where I wonder where number
I'm gonna
ten
We're going to have to write another question just to keep you quiet. But
I know,
okay, right.
They're all numbered. It goes from 9 to 11, so it's not there.
If Raph is ready for this, I'll play the intro and we will do that. I think. Hang on. Here we go.
And now, 11 questions.
Here we go. Number one. What's your guilty pleasure?
My guilty pleasure. I don't know. Lesbian lactation porn.
Wow.
I don't even know what to say to that. Moving on.
Okay. Baked beans, ranch style or pork and beans?
Ooh, I don't like baked beans, so neither.
That's a good answer.
Let's go back. I don't know
what ranch style is.
Let's go back to question one again, shall we?
Yeah. I don't know. Let's see. Puppies or kittens?
Oh, definitely puppies.
What's your favorite lunch meat?
My favorite lunch meat? Lately, prosciutto. I guess.
That's the first time I've heard that answer. Okay. That's an okay answer. Turkey will get an every time. So.
Turkey is the blandest of the lunch meats, so that's a bad answer. How's that pronounced again?
Prosciutto.
Is that really thin pork? I had some the other week. That was good. Yeah, good answer.
Okay, what was your first car?
It was a 1971 Chevy Impala.
Ooh, an Impala, huh? What do you fear most, snakes or spiders?
Well, I live in Texas, so rattlesnakes are much more. Mm. There's really not too many spiders that'll hurt me here.
Yeah.
Well, there are tarantulas here,
There's enough.
I lived in Texas when I was a kid, and tarantulas are so creepy. They really, really are.
Funny enough, it's the brown recluse that'll get you because it's just. I mean, the black widow obviously is very distinctive. Tarantulas are just big and hairy, but the brown recluse just looks like a bog. That just looks like a generic spider, and those will do you some damage, and they look like nothing. Every time I see a spider, I just assume that that's what it is, and I just stamp on it. I just assume everything here is out to kill me. So, you know.
It probably is.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Freddy, Jason, or Pinhead?
Pinhead, definitely.
You know, I've never seen
Excellent.
Hellraiser.
Good answer.
I've never seen Hellraiser.
Seriously?
Great movie.
Yeah. Xtina, after the show, watch it. Otherwise, I'm never speaking to you again.
Never.
Ever. No, ever.
Okay,
and
let's see.
And there'll be questions later as well, so no fudging it.
Damn it. Okay, first draft, handwritten or word processor?
Word processor, definitely.
Yeah. Favorite alcoholic drink?
I do not drink alcohol.
No. Can we get a buzzer with that, James? Okay, let's see. And number 11, because there is no number 10. One interesting non-writing related fact about you.
Interesting one that no one knows or one that everyone already knows?
Ooh, I want one that nobody knows.
Yeah, a secret would be good. Well, we've already let one secret out about the lesbian lactation porn, so see if you can top that.
Let's see. One that no one knows. I don't know. I'm a good cook. I can actually make sushi.
Oh, now then.
So are we invited to dinner?
We'll invite ourselves to his house, I think, for dinner. So.
If I ever finish getting unpacked, I just moved a couple months ago, and I've still got boxes everywhere.
Oh, wow,
and
yes.
Here is the
bonus question. Another question. Go on, bonus question. Just to
do not
make
be confused, though, because it's not number 11. It is the bonus question. Baseball or stamp collection?
Oh, they're about equal in excitement to me.
Well said.
To be honest, baseball is like organized standing.
Hey, I love baseball.
Yeah. I suppose by definition, stamp collecting is organized sitting, then, isn't it?
Okay, fine. I think you might have won
equally,
that one.
Equally dull. Yes.
Mm. Hey, my team won today, so I'm excited.
I don't think anybody cares, Xtina, to be honest with you.
I care. That's the point. I care.
So, Ralph, when you're not writing, what do you do? What do you do to sort of unwind?
Well, I work out a lot. I've been running a lot this past year. I did 5 half marathons in 3 months.
Wow.
Between so November, December, January, 5 and 4 months.
Wow.
I was averaging about two a month. And, you know, it helps me unwind, helps me think. When you're out there running by yourself, there's really not much else to do but get in your own head. So I work out problems. I work out plot points in my mind. I work out characters in my mind while I'm running. It helps a lot.
No, cool. I was always crap at sports and everything at school, and even driving a half marathon would probably tire me out now. So.
Well, you know, the very first marathon I ever did was the San Diego Marathon, and Reebok had put these inspirational billboards along the way that were anything but inspirational to me. They said, some people won't even drive 26 miles today.
Yeah.
That's not inspirational to me. That makes me think I'm fucking crazy. Excuse my language.
Yeah, what am I doing? I could be sat in the car listening to the radio now.
Exactly. But I used to fight. So I had to learn to love running in order to train for fights. So I used to do 5Ks every weekend, because if you've got a fight in 8 weeks, it's easy to put off running. You can go, it's 8 weeks away. I'll start running next week, and you can keep doing that until next thing you know, you're out of shape and you've got a 200-plus pound guy waiting to kill you. And you're out of shape. So I would enter a race every weekend, and that would make sure I would run during the week. Mm-hmm. And after a while, I started to enjoy it.
So do you not keep up with the kickboxing now? Is that behind you now, or do you still do a bit of that?
Oh yeah. No. I retired like 9 years ago. So I started getting slow. I used to be really fast for a heavyweight. In fact, I had a friend who was a lightweight, and him and I had a competition to see whose kicks were faster, and I beat him. So I was really fast for a heavyweight, so I didn't take a lot of damage, usually. Mm-hmm. And when I started to get slower, which happens when you get older, suddenly I started getting hit.
He didn't like that.
No. So I figured it was time for me to get out at that point.
That is a sound strategy. Yeah, you start getting hit, and well, I'm off now. Yeah.
Well,
yeah, very good. Very, very wise.
I hate that we're just about out of time for our first segment here. I thank you so much for coming on the show, and you have to promise to come back and see us. And
certainly will.
Okay, see, so yeah, I always wait for you to say yes, because now you can't back out. We have you recorded.
That's it. That's actually legally binding now, so.
Yes. And can you tell us where we can find you online?
Usually just find me on Facebook. On Twitter also, I'm just RapJW on Twitter. I don't have a website anymore because with social media now, it's not really necessary, so I don't.
Right.
I'm just Facebook and Twitter. I don't understand Instagram, so I don't have an Instagram account.
Yeah, there we are. Me too. It's a lot of them are a mystery to me. I think Facebook and Twitter are the only two. Even Twitter confounds me sometimes. So
yeah,
I always write something, and you write it, and then half of it's sort of blued out because I've gone over 40 characters. I'm like, goodness sake.
Yeah, and
what
we
can
have
I say?
All of
40
links.
Characters.
we have all of Rat's links up on our Facebook page. If anybody wants to stalk him, they can go ahead and find him there.
Brilliant. Okay. Thank you. I mean, it's been an absolute honor to meet a hero, sir. I'll send you my book, and again, there will be questions afterwards, so you can see what you caused.
Right. I look forward to it.
You have been warned.
Thank you.
Right,
okay,
thank
well,
you.
Thank you so much, Raph. Okay, we'll speak to you again soon. What a great guy.
Yes.
What a great guy. I was a little bit of fangirling from me because I'm a big, big...
Yeah.
It's always nice when we get to meet some... Usually we meet more of your sort of people you fan over, but...
I know.
Every now and then, major fan of Raph. So, yeah, it was good. That was fun. So, what we need to...
I think my new favorite phrase now is the lactating lesbian porn. I like that.
The lesbian lactation porn. It's and
whatever.
And I don't know about you, but I did look that up, and there
oh, God.
You go. What?
I did not look
all
it up.
Of,
no.
All part of life's rich tapestry, he thinks, but there you go. Come on, to be fair, we've written about a hell of a lot worse than that. So.
That's true. That's true.
Well, maybe you haven't, but I sure as hell have. So.
I'm working on it.
Good for you. Well, you've got Extina's Trailer Trash Terror, so I'm looking forward to that novel coming out, no doubt, on Hellbound Books Publishing next year. So that'll be one for the new year to look out for. So. There you go. So, hey, let's have a break because it's time for a break, and then we'll be back with Raph's reading, and we will be back with Becky the reviewer. So we'll be back in 2 minutes and 17 seconds, all being well.
Stupid Cupid, you're a real mean guy. I'd like to clip your wings so you can fly.
Stupid Cupid.
feel better now.
Oh, by God, I did. You know, it was a quick song. Caught me a bit by surprise. Yeah, I needed that. I needed that, but it needs to be done. Needs to be done. So, hey, we're going to have the reading in a minute or two, but I think, first of all, we're going to have one of my favourite sections, and it's going to be Fascinating Fruit Fly Facts of the Day. Did you know, and I actually worked this out myself, that there are 5 calories in 1 teaspoon of fruit flies?
There really?
You go. Yeah. I did actually calculate. It actually happened many, many years ago. My wife was on a pretty drastic diet, and she'd accidentally sort of swallowed a fruit fly. And she was panicking because she was literally, this diet was like, she had something like 500 calories per day for 6 months. And she was panicking. She was eating this fruit fly, and we actually worked out you'd have to eat a teaspoonful to get just 5 calories.
Oh, that's calories. So gross. So we've talked about so many gross things tonight. Yeah.
So, I mean, we've all inhaled the odd. I remember when I was a kid, I used to cycle a lot. And we used to go. I remember one summer we had a plague of aphids, and literally the air was just thick with the damn things. And me and my mates are still going on our bikes, and I must have eaten, you know, 100 weight or 2 of the damn things. So.
Oh my God.
But so we'll balance things out with my least favourite segment of the show.
Yay!
Which is Extina's Baseball Corner.
One. I've 2 words to say to that. Shite!
What's the other one?
Shite!
There you go. So how has the Blue Jays done this week, for anybody who really cares?
We just finished up an exciting 2-game series with the Devil Rays, and they kicked our butts one night. We kicked their butts the next night. That was really awesome. And then a favorite player of mine, Carrera, he was hit in the foot with a baseball the first night. But he just finished out the game like nothing was wrong. But you could see on his face that he looked like he was hurt. The next day he found out that he had a fracture, and now he'll be out like indefinitely. So it's very sad. Yeah, and he was a really
thanks.
Good...
So that was...
Yeah, I know. You're,
yeah, don't build your part up. You know, you've done. Okay, let's just leave it there, shall we? No, nobody cares about his foot, all right? Really? You know, you should man up. That's what I say. Man up.
Well, he did.
You know,
he finished the game under a fractured foot. He finished the game.
It's just, yeah, well, you know, as we were told at school, you know, you walk it off, you'll be all right.
Yeah,
there's a great Yorkshire saying, berate.
Yeah,
which is
right.
Like, stop being a pussy, berate, get on with it. Yeah, Guillaume Ithrin, that was another one, Guillaume Ithrin. We should do it, we should have a Yorkshire section and teach our listener the nuances of the Yorkshire language.
Because it's
a rich one, it really is.
Yeah, you know,
I don't use a lot of them. I mean, I still do occasionally, but they're all there. They're all there. So my parents thought a lot of, you know, broad Yorkshire was common. So they tried to iron it out of me. My sister actually had elocution lessons. So she talks quite proper like.
Wow.
And shit. You know, if you put me next to, you know, proper, you know, somebody with proper broad Yorkshire, and it's a world apart. My best friend's granddad, many years ago, he talked, you know, like right broad Yorkshire, and he and I struggle to understand him sometimes. And then you have sort of a bit like, I was from South Yorkshire, and then you have people from North Yorkshire. And again, it could be almost like a different language. You know, they have different words for things.
It
was just...
Do you remember the guest that we had on that was really Irish? I think he was really, really Irish.
No, we had the Glaswegian. Was it Kevin Kennedy?
I could not understand
we had, it was,
him at
it was
all.
The Glaswegian. I mean, I have Glaswegian friends, and I struggle with him a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a great, it's a beautiful, beautiful, rich, resonant language, you know, resonant accent.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, Yorkshire, I mean, you know, relatively speaking, Yorkshire is the largest county in England, and split between the north, east, south, and west, you know, and somebody from West Yorkshire, I mean, I spent a lot of years in West Yorkshire, funnily enough, so I went to university and sort of lived for a while. And yet, deep down South Yorkshire, even between like Doncaster and Barnsley or Sheffield, you know, again, it was almost like a different dialect. It was interesting. I mean, you know, when you think, you know, relative to Texas, you can fit, there's like five Englands into Texas, let alone Yorkshire's. You know, Yorkshire's probably the size of Houston. It's just,
yeah, yeah. Well,
you know, but it's great. I mean, I still remember, it's because obviously I grew up, it's lodged in my brain. All the, I should do an Irving Welsh, actually, and because obviously he writes his books in with a lot of the Scottish dialect in, which makes them interesting reading, I have to say. I should do that with Yorkshire, just make it, you know, just right broad Yorkshire. It'll probably sell nothing over here, and nobody will understand it.
Yeah, I was going to say, you can bring the you know, the culture and the beautiful language, and I will bring the language of my people, the, you know, the trailer park people.
The trailer park, trailer people, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, hey, we have a pre-recorded reading from Ralph, from his book, Munchausen's by Proxy. Didn't want to not do it, so we're going to play that now, and then we'll be back with Becky.
Ellie greeted the... Hello, everybody. I am going to read a selection from the Book of 1,000 Sins. This is my first published collection. I'm going to read Munchausen by Proxy. It's one of my favorite stories. Here we go. Ellie greeted the day with a smile that chased back the night. She cocked her ear toward the heavens and heard the chorus of screams and moans serenade her, seeming to come from every direction at once. Her children were calling. Her poor, ailing offspring needed her. They were suffering, and only she could help them. She brushed the morning dew from her hair. The droplets sprinkled down in a fine mist that settled to the ground beneath her. Her long platinum locks drifted on a gentle current of breezes, like strands of cirrus clouds trailing behind her. Ellie considered herself an astounding beauty. She hated the fact that people often mistook her for a man. She was proud of her womanhood, and prouder still of being the mother of so many beautiful children. No one had created more life than her. Even after all the kids she'd had, her breasts were still full and ripe. They were too large to fit into a bra, yet they did not droop in the slightest. Gravity held no power over them at all. No plastic surgery could yet mimic their perfection. No man had hips as wide as hers, or thighs as full and curvaceous, or an ass as round and plump. In fact, no woman did either. She was, in her mind, the ultimate woman. It bothered her at times that others didn't see her that way. "How many children do I have to prove that I'm a real woman?" she shrieked to no one in particular. No one ever listened to her anyway, until she did something dramatic. Then they all paid attention. Ellie was radiant today. A warm glow of joy shimmered about her as she made her way across town. Her children were calling her to their side, and nothing made her feel more alive than being needed. They were sick, miserable, depressed, and only her love could make them better. She began to sing with a voice like wind and rain as she felt her children's love envelop her. Ellie took her time going to the hospital that day. The sun was newly risen, and its yellow and orange rays rippled across the sky like an ocean of spawning koi. The shadows receded, and Ellie's smile widened in admiration of the day. This was going to be quite a beautiful one. She wished she had more time to sit and enjoy it, but the insistent cries of her progeny urged her forward. Little Joey lay in the hospital burning with fever as the acquired immune deficiency syndrome ravaged his flesh. Joey was a hemophiliac who'd been unlucky enough to have received a transfusion with an untested batch of plasma. His parents won the malpractice suit, $16.5 million, but the money hadn't been able to purchase a cure. Ellie hugged her son, warming his cold, damp skin as he shivered and sweated and prayed for a miracle. The nurses watched him, touched by his piety. Joey was one of the most faithful of all Ellie's children. No one could believe as single-mindedly as a child. Even with the rashes and melanoma spreading across his flesh, even with the chills and racking cough, even though he could no longer control his bowels and was losing weight at the rate of nearly a pound a day, he continued to pray for a cure. Ellie could feel the power of Joey's belief wash over her like warm spring rain. She smiled down at him, impressed by his strength and courage. "Merciful God, help me," he gasped. Joey's faith was not the last desperate ditch, belief of those sinners, frantic for a miracle to save their rotting souls from hell, gasping for heaven like a drowning man clutching a life preserver. It had always been genuine and strong. His love for God was unfaltering and unconditional. Even after all he'd been through, his eyes were glazed with rapture as he stared heavenward. A wrinkled, balding, white-haired, liver-spotted priest came in to give him communion. He looked like Lazarus, reborn, yet still decomposing. Joey hadn't wanted to miss Mass even while he was hospitalized, so he'd had them summon the old Jesuit to perform the communion for him. If Joey needed any more proof that miracles were possible, then just the fact that such an impossibly ancient human was still alive and ambulatory would have been enough. The dying young boy was far too weak to kneel, so the old priest stood over his bed. "The body of Christ," he said as he genuflected with the cracker and then placed it on Joey's outstretched tongue. Ellie squeezed her son tighter as he swallowed the communal wafer and continued to pray. The boy even had white spots and sores inside his mouth and on his tongue. He was dying despite all the high-priced drugs they had him on. Only she could save him now. As she held him, she could feel his fever slowly abating, his temperature dropping, his tremors quieting. She kissed him on his sweaty brow. He smiled up at her with those enraptured eyes. Then he climbed out of the bed. The nurses stared at him in awe as he shrugged off his bed sheets and stepped down onto the cool tiled floor. Earlier that day, he'd been too weak to lift his head from the pillow to take his medication. "It's a miracle," they shouted, almost in unison. One of them turned and thanked the old priest, kneeling to kiss his hand. The old Jesuit smiled pompously. Ellie's jealousy flared. It was her love that had resurrected her son from near death, not that old fraud's useless prayers. She slammed into the aging priest as she stormed out of the room, knocking him into the wall. He clutched his chest with one gnarled, arthritic hand, and his eyes went wide as his heartbeat stuttered and threatened to stall. The priest genuflected and uttered a silent prayer, taking deep breaths to slow his thundering pulse. With a warm smile on her face, feeling the love of her children as it flowed over her in waves from all those in the room who'd borne witness to the miracle, Elle left little Joey's room behind as she stalked off down the hall. The nurses split as they burst into action, half grabbing at the fallen priest and other rushing to perform tests on the little miracle boy, praising Ellie loudly whenever one of the tests came back with positive results. Even his white blood count was rising. The HIV appeared to be in recession. Still, there were more of Ellie's children who were suffering, more of them who needed her help, her love. In the next room, Ellie's daughter Nikki lay on a gurney with legs spread, biting her bottom lip against the memory of pain as the nurse swabbed the walls of her vagina with a cotton ball, collecting semen samples for a DNA test. The policewoman calmly took pictures of the bruises and bite marks on Nikki's battered face, breasts, and buttocks, and picked flecks of blood and skin from beneath her fingernails with tweezers, sealing them in Ziploc bags. A stern, middle-aged doctor came in, mumbled an insincere greeting and a few tepid words of encouragement, then patted the frightened young woman on the arm to raise the thick vein on the inside of her elbow. He filled a syringe with doxycycline and administered an injection for the chlamydia and gonorrhea and a prescription for Valtrex to treat the herpes her attackers had infected her with. Sighing, as if the entire thing were as much of an ordeal for him as it was for her, he told the nurse to take blood samples for an AIDS test and recommended to Nikki that she come back again in 3 months for another test. Nikki nodded her head solemnly, with her bottom lip trembling as if it were about to fall. Her eyes glistened with emotion, yet she continued to fight back the tears, snarling in rage and revulsion at the memory of her assailant's foul breath steaming in her face, their oily sweat dripping down into her forehead and into her eyes, coating her skin in a noxious film. She shuddered and suppressed a scream as she recalled the vile taste of their semen ejaculating down her throat and the stomach-churning pain of their angry cocks tearing into her rectum and splitting wide her vagina before they mutilated her. Ellie rushed to Nikki's side just before she lost her tenuous grip on sanity. Nikki smiled, happy to have her mother there to see her through the tragedy. The nurses were all impressed with the love and faith she showed in her mother, even after being gang-raped by strangers on the subway platform at 4 o'clock in the morning. They didn't know how to tell her that the damage the rapist had done to her reproductive system with the 40 ounce of St. Ives they'd shattered inside of her vagina while sodomizing her had destroyed any chances she'd ever have of bearing a child. The nurse picked more jagged shards of glass from her labia. Nikki winced and tears squeezed out from the corners of her closed eyelids. Once the semen samples had been collected, the young nurse swabbed the area with iodine and cursed when the doctor exited the room, leaving her to break the news to the poor Nikki.
Wow. There you go. So we had to play. That was intense stuff. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah.
And he read it beautifully, though. He did.
He reads beautifully. I mean, he's got a gorgeous, gorgeous voice, you know. But I've me gripped. That was, he paints an incredibly vivid picture, which is why I'm such a fan. I think. But no, that was great. Thank you for that, Raph. That was awesome. Right. Okay. I saw we're sort of mixing things up a little bit tonight. I think shall we? She's waiting in the wings. I think we need to. Hang on. We can't have Becky on without her little. And you know, I've had a bit of a clear out on all my sort of little jingles, and I can't find half of them now.
Oh, no.
So there we go. Let's have Becky the reviewer.
Oh hey, looks like it's time to review something. Oh no.
Oh no. Becky, how are you this evening?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm excited. Not in a twitching sort of way. I'll just throw that in. And nothing is twitching, not at this time of night, you know. So everyone's safe. No, we're good. I'm obviously not twitching. Xtina's drunk. How are you?
I'm pretty good.
Good. So what have you got for us this evening, my dear?
I've got a book called Granville. It's by Alice Black and David Owen Hughes.
Oh, David. We love David on this show. David,
yeah.
We need to get him on the show. I know he's in Wales.
Yeah, I was
wondering why
we haven't had him on yet.
We need to, because obviously we can pre-record to, because it's like, you know, 4 o'clock in the morning over there right now. But yeah, we need to get David on, because he's again, I'm a fan of everybody's tonight. But yeah, I love David's
yeah.
work. He writes really well. He does write really well. I love the Welsh accent. I really love the Welsh accent. So we need to get him on. Anyway, so I'm going to be quiet and let Becky review her book.
Okay. This book is about a young man who is, for lack of a better word, kind of a loner. He's got a group of kids that make fun of him and cruel to him. And he lives with his mother, who has quite a few problems of her own. Anyway, his talent is making masks, and he makes them out of paper mache and all kinds of stuff. And you know, he wants to learn how to make them out of latex so he can make a really, really good one. So one day at school, he had really very badly, and he has decided that he has had enough. So he sneaks out of the house that night, and the first thing he sees when he sneaks out of the house is the next door neighbor's scarecrow, and he has a mask on. And when he says, he becomes, in his mind, an entirely different person. And it takes spins. It's very well written. It's, I couldn't tell, you know, what parts Alice, what David wrote. It's very, very engrossing. When you first start reading it, it just doesn't stop.
Yeah. You know, just the part with the masks made me think of Halloween, and especially the remakes with, you know, Michael Myers, and he was in that, the insane asylum, and he's making the masks, and that
yeah.
was so creepy. Yeah. So
yeah, mask, it really is when you read this in this book, too. It's really, I mean, it really reached out and grabbed you, because that's, you know, the very first part of it where they're talking about the mask and you know, and him making them, and I'm like, oh, good.
Yeah,
you don't
yeah.
have to go to his room.
Right?
Not
so,
at all. Thanks anyway.
What would you, five out of, how many stars would you give it out of 5 stars?
5, probably. 4
yeah,
and a half,
yeah.
5. Yeah.
Awesome.
It's really, really good. I was really pleased reading it. They kind of left it open to where they could write another one if they wanted to. So, and I would like that very much.
Yeah. Awesome. It's definitely going on the red list.
So next week, Becky's going to be reviewing Green Eggs and Ham, as promised. Which is a timeless classic. A timeless classic. So, while we've got Becky, we've been threatening this for a while. While we've got Becky, we're going to put you on the spot now, Becky. So here we go. Are you ready, Xtina?
I am.
And now, 11 questions.
Okay, again, you know, I'm going to say 11 questions, but we're still missing one, and yeah, I don't know. I've looked back, even. I went back in the history and everything, and there is no number 10. So I think you're just messing with me, James.
I'm telling you, James, did that to see how long it would take you to notice.
It's taken
almost a year for it to twig onto that, which is great, isn't it? So,
I know, and I don't even know. I was just looking at that going, 9, 11, hey! Okay, anyway, number 11, what's your guilty pleasure?
Signed limited edition books. I have quite a collection.
That's a good one. Yeah.
I love them.
Let's see. Baked. Oh, and how many do you have? How many do you have right now? Do you know?
Oh, gosh. A bookshelf or two full. Yeah.
Whoa.
Quite a few. I'm not sure the number, really.
Awesome. Okay. Baked beans, ranch style or pork and beans?
Pork and beans.
Yeah, because, again, I don't even believe ranch style exists. You know, that's just...
I will send you a picture. We have some in the pantry. I had some just the other week on toast.
Yeah,
we
but you say this every week, and I have yet to see a picture.
I must.
Yes. Okay, puppies or kittens?
Kittens.
Oh,
dear, hang on.
Yes. Yeah.
There we go. That's what you get.
I like puppies, but I love my kitties.
You know, I'm telling you, we have the extreme horror writers on, and every time I ask puppies or kittens, I'm always afraid they're going to be like, oh, puppies taste wonderful or something like that. I swear I am. Kittens are a little tough, you know, but puppies are really great.
They probably taste
okay.
like chicken.
Yeah.
You have to tenderize them just right.
Okay, what's your favorite lunch meat?
Probably ham.
Ham is good. Yeah. I won't buzz you for that one. What was your first car?
A Ford Escort.
Not bad, not bad. It's a Ford though.
It's
a Ford.
It didn't even have air conditioning.
Oh man, yeah, that's.
Yeah.
What do you fear most, snakes or spiders? And I can't say that for some reason tonight.
Oh,
I think I've been drinking
spiders.
Too much. Definitely, definitely.
If I find a spider, everybody within 3 miles will know about it.
I know, and I'm such a wuss that there was a story. I got to tell this cute story. I got a few seconds here. There was this huge spider, and it was just me and the kids. And I thought, okay, I'm going to be, super mom, and I'm going to get this freaking spider. And I don't even know exactly what happened, but I ended up on a chair and with a flashlight in my hand. And every time the spider would move, I would scream. So, it was just a mess. Like, I was petrified with fear. So.
Yeah. No.
Oh, dear.
I'm not getting close enough to kill him because in my mind, my philosophy is it's as afraid of me as I am of it. And if I move, it's going to run. I'm going to run. We're going to collide. It's going to be on me, and I'm going to die. So, no.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Freddy, Jason, or Pinhead?
Oh, Pinhead.
I liked the game last week with the fuck, marry, or kill Freddy, Jason, or Pinhead. That was amazing.
Yes, that was funny.
Okay, first draft, handwritten or word processor?
Oh, I use a word processor for everything.
Definitely. Favorite alcoholic drink?
I don't drink too much. If I do, it's probably going to be a Budweiser.
Where is the buzzer?
Oh, hang on. Here we go.
Yes. Okay, one interesting
Becky,
non-writing.
You're not drinking. You're not drinking enough.
I know.
Oh, no.
Drink more.
But I have to go get me a bottle of tequila.
Yeah. Okay, one interesting non-writing related fact about you.
I played the piano since I was 5.
Oh, I love that. That is so beautiful. I always wanted to either play piano or maybe guitar or something, but I'm not musical at all. And I can't sing.
Oh, I love it.
I can't sing.
I
my son actually
said
to me.
I don't.
My son actually said to me tonight, he told me to stop singing because I make something like, you make horrible songs even worse or something like that. I was like,
oh
my God.
Oh, bless him.
Aww.
Oh,
was,
what,
yeah,
a sweet tea. What a sweet tea.
Crushed me. Okay, and here is the bonus question. Again, not to be confused with number 11, because it's not. It's just the bonus question. right? Baseball or stamp collection?
Oh, James is going to buzz the buzzer on me again, but I'm an avid Atlanta Braves fan, so
baseball!
Boo!
I can't wait until we play your team again. Yeah. Well, that was fun. I've never got. Yes. No. Have I? Yes. I was. You're the only one, James, that has never answered the 11 questions. So.
No, I did. No, I did. No, I did on the
did
show.
You
where,
yes, you
where
oh, you did.
I was plugging
Flanagan.
I did. I think my answers were all correct.
Just because you manned the buzzer, that's.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, although, yeah. I am perfect, as you know. So there you go. There is that. I just want to come back. You. Before next week, you have to have watched Hellraiser, and Becky and I are going to ask you questions on it.
God, is there cliff notes or something?
You have to watch the movie. It is certainly probably one of the best, most original horror movies.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to. I think there's been 9 sequels. You don't have to watch all of those. They stopped getting good.
The best anyway.
I think the second and third were pretty good. I actually enjoyed you know, Hellraiser 3, Hell on Earth, is one that I can watch again and again. But after that, it started getting a bit, it started sliding downhill a little bit. But the first three were just awesome, you know, really, really good.
Yeah, I'll have to look them up.
But I remember watching the first one on VHS back in 87, 88.
Yeah.
And it was one of those, and I've never done this before or since. And literally, I got to the end, and I just rewound it and watched it again. It was so different. So different than anything that's got any horror movies gone before. When you think, you know, in the 80s, that's when, I mean, we had the whole Freddy Krueger thing. Nightmare on Elm Street, the first one was really good. Then you got all very campy. And, you know, we had, in the 80s, it was like the more campy sort of horror, and then Hellraiser, and it was like, well, my only regret is that I never saw it on the big screen. If ever they decide to do a Hellraiser night and put it on the big screen, I would, in a heartbeat, I'd love to see it on the big screen.
I guess I'm sold. I'll have to watch this. I'll have to make my son watch it with me, because he doesn't really care for horror movies. I don't think he's my kid. I never checked. but he doesn't like scary things, so...
Yeah, well, you could swap him out for something better, you know. I mean, that's a swap meet. You know, somebody wants a soft kid. You know, so I can have one that's a little bit tougher, you know, please. You probably could.
Yeah.
It's funny, my little girl, I mean, she's 8 and she loves them. She loves her. We watched Arachnophobia last week. We just, we're halfway through The Mummy, the original Mummy. Well, not the original, the 1999 Mummy, because she wants to see the new film. We'll probably go see that the weekend, but she wants, you know, when I said, oh, there's, you know, one, so we're going to watch that, and probably The Mummy Returns as well, so.
Yeah,
but, she loves them.
My daughter loves them. Scary movies, too. I remember the first, really, for her, the first scary movie was, Connecticut, what is that? The Haunting in Connecticut. And
that was a pretty good film. Mm-hmm.
She screamed so many times, and it was so funny that I couldn't stop laughing through the whole thing. So it was an amazing experience. I was like, oh my God, I'm torturing this poor child. But, you know, she loved it, and even though she screamed.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm the same way. I love, like, roller coasters, but they will scare the crap out of me. I mean, I will think I'm dying. But yet, I want to go back again. I want to do it again. You know.
Yeah. Well, that's the point. If they don't scare you or stir you in any way, what's the point?
Yeah, exactly.
I've heard in one movie.
Really?
Only one.
Really?
What
was
it?
Yeah.
I had a very good friend that took me to see The Hills Have Eyes when it came out in the theater. Yeah.
Yeah.
And when the little mutated hill guy pops around the corner of the camper. Oh, I've never seen the original movie.
Yeah.
So
no,
in a very packed theater at 11 o'clock at night, it pops around the corner and that thing scared the snot out of me and I screamed, oh,
awesome.
In the middle of the theater. Yeah.
I would have
everybody
awesome.
Laughed. Yeah.
So look, we need to go. It's time to go. I'm afraid time has got away from us again. Thank you, Becky. Thank you for joining us and reviewing stuff, and it's time to say goodnight, Xtina.
Goodnight, Xtina.
Goodnight.
Bye.
Bye.
Things we've done together, oh, while our hearts were young. I'm a walking in the rain, tears are falling and I feel a pain, wishing you were here by me to end this misery. Run away.